The meeting of the Board of Technical Registration to order. Today is April 23rd, 2024. And first off, I'd like to go ahead and do a roll call. Mr. Weber, would you be so kind?
Mr. Kolenko?
Present.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Mr. Nesgood?
Present.
Mr. Gilmore?
Present.
Ms. Klett?
Present.
Ms. Hopik?
Present.
Mr. Smith?
Present.
Ms. Bohaw?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Ms. Lindgren? Ms. Skanky? Hey, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Hayden. All right, first item on our agenda here is the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes per person. Pursuant to ARS, board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that that matter be placed on a future agenda. Just for those who are here and online, if you already have an agenda item, you do not have to come up and speak at this time, but if you are here to make a call to the public and you are not currently on the agenda, you're welcome to come up and make a statement for up to 3 minutes. Is there anyone here or online who wishes to make a call to the public? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and close the call to the public, and we'll move on to item number 4 of our agenda, which is the adoption of last month's, the March 25th, 2024 board meeting minutes. Have all board members had a chance to review the minutes? Are there any discussions, comments, or corrections related to board minutes? All right, hearing none, we'll entertain a motion to adopt last month's meeting minutes.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'd like to propose a motion to approve the March 25th, 2024 board meeting minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Bill Nesgood, I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any further comments? If not, all right, those here in person, please say aye if you are in agreement.
Aye. Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thanks. Those meeting minutes have been adopted. Next is item number 5, which is our consent agenda. We have quite a bit there under the licensing matters. So, Julie, if you want to just make a quick statement there regarding that, that would be great.
Sure. Thank you. Good morning, Board. The majority of the licensing matters are under the consent agenda. Open to answer any questions if there are any.
Does any board member have any consent items that you wish to pull off of consent? Hearing none, then, can I get a motion to accept the consent agenda items 5A1 through 5A7?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I propose a motion to approve the consent agenda 5A1 through 5A7.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Do we have a second?
Dr. Campbell, second.
Each two of them. Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Final discussion. All right. Those here in person, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. Those licensing matters have been accepted and approved. We do have additionally under licensing matters items 6A and 6B. That's because those two agenda items under consent also require a second step. So, Julie, would you like to just speak to that a bit more?
Yes, and that's correct for 6A1. For Mr. Peter Nguyen, his exam waiver was under the consent agenda and required approval prior to his registration being approved. And 6B is a separate item.
All right, so we, I'm assuming we're going to want to take these as two separate motions. Is that right? So then let's go ahead and take a motion, if we can, for licensing matter item 681.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I propose a motion to approve item 6A1 for your win.
And Mr. Sales, do you have a second?
Well, Nesgood, I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Nesgood. Any final discussion? All right. Those in person in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, that motion passes. Moving on to item 6B1 and 2, we do have the applicant here. I don't know if you wish to present or speak to the board, or if you're just here to answer questions. To answer questions or actually make a statement?
I'm ready to answer those.
Okay.
And I can give a brief synopsis if you like. The applicant provided, applied for exam waiver, FE and PE structural exam waivers. The applications were evaluated by two evaluators, the first one denying the exam waivers and the second recommending. So now it is before the board for decision.
And Julie, if you wouldn't mind just making a brief statement, your name and the agenda item that you're here for, and anything you wish to add.
Morning, everyone. I'm Satish Venkatesan Somasundra. I'm from India. I got my 17 years of structural engineering experience in and around India. I got my licensing at India for three different states. So I practiced particularly in one place called Karnataka State under judicial. I continuously worked for 17 years. Under 17 years, 10 years, I got my license as a structural engineer with Bruhat Bangalore Mahanagara Padi. It's called as the Corporation of Bangalore City.
Thank you. Board, any comments, questions? A resident engineer would like to make a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Sales, appreciate you coming down here today. Looking through the application, just a few things caught my eye in there. I just would like to ask a few questions for you. So in looking through the experience profiles that were listed in there, first off, you're requesting, there's two items before us, so I guess is the FE exam waiver and then also the PE structural exam waiver. So my questions will be more appropriate for the PE structural exam waiver. So that's the way I'll be phrasing the questions. So related to the experience that you show in all the work that you've performed over in India, there's a lot of information related to technical support for soil investigations, materials quality audits, soil investigation, and then there's a couple more that are basically the same text, technical support for soil investigations. And in reviewing those items and how they might apply to R4-30-221A17 related to what the definition of a structural engineer would do, I'm not seeing a lot of the items in there related to soil investigations. And so I wanted to find out a little bit more from you if you could give me a little more history of what structural things and designs that you performed over in India, or if it was all soils.
Thank you, sir. Whenever we begin a project as a residential, industrial, or commercial sectors, we'll start with the architectural plan. We'll understand the architectural plan elevations with the details and what is the risk factors involved in that, like how it will differ from a regular structure. Further, we will understand the soil investigation report, which has that about the soil borehole conditions with respect to the soil case or site location. There is a 6 meter to 8 meter deep soil investigation report will be there in our hand. So we'll study the soil criterias and each layers, which has a different in layers, and what is the recommendations provided by the soil expertise, and what is the allowable bearing pressure, what is the load carrying capacity, and what is the water table available underneath the soil, and what type of the foundations are recommended. With respect to that, we will just inspect the field. Sometimes if you feel that, why not, we can do some manual inspections also. When we dig in, say we design for a basement minus one level we are going, sometimes we'll do a test pit also. Even after doing that, we'll understand that there will be a good amount of soil strength will be available. Looking at the engineer's perspective, with our experience, we can feel that thing. So we will recommend for a second thought of the soil investigation. Sometimes that makes a good results. Even if some of the soil report we got is a total pile foundations, whereas after our practical field investigation, we recommend for a retest, and it comes out with a positive way that only the particular zones, the blocks, got the pile and other blocks, we got a Pratt Foundation, other got, we got a isolated foundations. And this is about the foundations things. And coming to the retaining wall, obviously when we are going with this minus floors, we'll design the retaining wall, concrete retaining wall, and the concrete retaining wall with respect to the active and passive pressure we will design. Furthermore, the space between the retaining wall and the main structure columns will be designed as per the architectural requirement, and the ramp portions and where the any cover which is coming to the temporary cover coming over the ramp, all those things will be considerations. Further, we will design the superstructure for a live load, dead load, wind load and seismic loads. In fact, we don't have much on snow load in India, except very few places. So further, we will design the things. Two set of designs we will do. As a beginner, I started with my systems as a STAT Pro I design. Furthermore, when my juniors are started designing, I will just do my loading capacity with respect to the every floor, what is the load carrying capacities, number of floor plates. Then, if it's a residential structure, what is the code says, is it a live load reduction is applicable or not, all those will be considered. I'll just calculate my manually, what is the actual reactions coming to the each and every footing, and accordingly, what is the dimensions can be provided. This is no need of system or something. With our experience, the manually I can able to means as a structural engineer, we can able to produce the documents. I'll just cross check, is that the team, what they are doing, is it right or not, before stamping or before sending to the clients for approval or for a budgeting purpose itself. We will wait, make sure that the quantifications or the concepts what we prepared is at least a 90% accuracy. Once those concepts is approved by architects and clients, further we'll go for a detailed design with each and every element. We got the forces. Nowadays it's easy for us to use a system, but still I'll believe that I'll just check the random thing and the critical where the cantilever portions are the long columns where we have the multiple connections, point load beams will be taken as a separate case. I'll just take it as a manually apply the forces, what is the point load, what is the UDL forces, how it will act, WL by square 8 or WL square by 16, all those things will be, we'll cross check it manually, not as good as a system, but 95% accuracy we can able to produce it by manual design checking. So I believe all the seniors will believe that manual design still, even though the systems are now very good appreciated way, I believe that manual design for a checking purpose, not a whole thing for a random thing. Always we will focus on that where the criticality. The critical things will be picked up and checked manually, and if I have any concerns or which I can't able to take a decision, I'll always check with the superiors or expertise in this case. So always that is welcomed in our place also. Whenever the expertise, even though the expertise no need to be a 60 plus, sometimes 25 also is an expertise when he is in very good knowledge in that. That way I believe, and we will just discuss what are the things, we will check the clients and any feedback, we take it back and we'll design the thing properly with RCC elements, structural steel elements, and what are the architectural facade elements or any other special equipment which is going to keep on the terrace. Say any cooling towers or any other special HVAC equipments, all those will be occupied. Sometimes they may not build as they designed. They may build in future. So that case, we will build for a futuristic thing. But one critical condition is, we may design a 2005 some buildings I designed, whereas in 2017 they are going to build, say example. But in between 2016, the code got revised, the seismic code, we called as IS 1893, that got revised in 2016. So, but that case, what will be there? But then what we will do, always we give a note that says that this designs and the details provided as per so-and-so codes. When the code is revised, this design has to be re-looked by expertise or this has to be rechecked with the proper design inputs as per the revised code. With this note, we will deliver it, sir. And further, we will give the proper detailing. The detailing will be as per the code, whatever it says, from footing, column, beams, say flexural and compression elements, all the slab elements. We make sure that stability is the first. Of course, that optimization. Every engineer will be focusing on the optimization to focus on a better growth of our future. Thank you.
That covered a lot of the questions that I've written down. So thank you very much. Based on that, what you were mentioning, and then also reading through, you're mostly specialized, that your experience background is structures, buildings, in that multi-story buildings, commercial, residential?
Industrial as well, sir.
Okay. With that, I don't have any other questions. You covered all my list here, so appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for coming in.
Very thorough response. We really do appreciate that. Currently this is before the board for both the waiver of the fundamental exam and the professional exam for structural engineering. Mr. Sales, if you are so moved.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions.
Yes, of course.
Sorry, this might be for Julie more than anybody. A couple process questions. In the notes here, it says the first evaluation was completed in November 2023 with a recommendation to deny. And a few months later, in 2024, it was recommended to approve. It says the first denial was based on documents submitted by the applicant or lack of documents. Was there a significant amount of documents then provided, or is this a difference of opinion between the same documents?
It was the same documents, just a difference in opinion. I requested to have it sent to another evaluator because the first evaluator was one of our board members, and so I thought it would be best to have a second opinion for deeper discussion.
Thank you.
You mentioned you had a couple questions.
That covers it.
Okay, great. All right. Do we have any further discussion from the board? If not, we can entertain a motion for both agenda items 6B1 and 6B2.
I do have a question. Is there anywhere in the statutes or whatever that specifically states what subject matter has to be covered on these exams? I mean, how can you compare, you know, different licensing unless it's, is there a standard?
We do have the education standards for each of the different disciplines. Like, for example, in architecture, we have the NCARB education standard, and CES has a similar standard as well. Mr. Sales, I assume that's a fair statement?
Yes. I mean, I think looking at, well, in review of basically this one here, I think you're going related to what ARS 32126 A3, where it talks about has been actively engaged in another state or foreign country as a professional registrant in the profession in which the registrant has sought for at least 10 years and holds a valid certificate of registration good standing issued by that state or country.
Okay.
And so in this case, the documents provided are, to me, in my opinion, fall under the or country and has been practicing. That's why I really appreciate the information provided to help flush out some of the information that was provided in the attachments for experience and history and such. So,
okay. Any further questions, comments? Thanks. Do we have a motion then for both items, B1 and B2?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I propose a motion that the application for exam waiver under 6B1 and 2 be approved.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. That's the motion. Do we have a second?
Kelly Bohal, I'll second that.
Thank you, Ms. Bohal. Any final discussion? All right, those in person, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, this motion has been approved. Congratulations, sir. Thank you. All right, we don't have anything under formal hearing, so we'll move on to agenda item 8, which is enforcement actions. Under item 8A1, we have one resolution proposed for dismissal. We do have a couple individuals that are online, but they are only here to speak if there is a question by the board. Does the board have any questions for our investigation? All right. If not, then we'll entertain a motion for dismissal.
Sure. This is Gilmore. I'd like to make a motion that we accept staff recommendation for dismissal of case number P24086.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Do we have a second?
This is Dana Kleider, second.
Thank you, Ms. Kleider. Any final discussion? All right. All those in person in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? That motion for dismissal has been approved. All right, moving on to item 8B1. These are proposed for resolution with letter of concern. I just want to sit there for a bit. I don't believe we have anyone here in favor or opposed to item 8B1. So we can go ahead and just make a motion for issuing a letter of concern.
Mr. Chair, is there any board members that would like to hear the summary report before motioning? It's at your discretion, but just ask you.
Any board member wish to hear a summary?
If I may, excuse me, this is Jason Mullis. When the letter of concern, we are present on behalf of Mr. Wilcox.
Thank you, sir. That's actually the next item on our agenda. We are currently on the item that precedes that one, but if you want to stand by, we'll get to that one next.
Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales, I wouldn't mind hearing the synopsis.
If you would, please. Thanks.
Thank you. The board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting a home inspection in Cottonwood, Arizona, inaccurately reported on multiple items. Interviews were conducted, and this case was sent for a case assessment. And the case assessor did find that the initial allegations were unsubstantiated. However, there were four missing or deficient standards of practices that were located within the home inspection report. Three out of the four standards of practices were clerical in nature, and the fourth one was de minimis in nature. Therefore, based on consistency with past cases, we are recommending a letter of concern to be issued in regards to the report itself.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Any further questions by the board? If not, entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the proposed consent agreement or letter of concern.
Thank you for clarifying that. So yeah. Yes, it is a letter of concern.
For H124-003.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I second that letter of concern to be issued to the respondent.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any further discussion? All right, those in person, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, that motion has been approved. All right, moving on to item 8B2, case HI24-012. This is regarding Kylie Wilcox. Just move to that item real quick. Mr. Perrin, if you wouldn't mind maybe just doing a quick synopsis, and then we will hear from the attorney for the respondent.
Morning. In August, the board received a complaint alleging the respondent conducted a home inspection in Sierra Vista, failed to report on roof and fascia damage, failed to report on electrical malfunctions in a hazard electric box, and failed to report on vent returns in the kitchen. We sent it out to get assessed. It came back from assessment. The attorney, Jason Moles, you guys are going to hear from in a second, had this statement just briefly. He believed that Mr. Wilcox disclosed numerous concerns regarding the property, including each of the items raised by the alleger. He said it could be legitimately disputed that Wilcox met his obligation under the contract and pertinent standards of care. We sent it out to get assessed. He did not substantiate the original allegations from the assessor, but found two other deficiencies. On the electrical system compatibility and separation of firewalls. He recommended a letter of concern, and then Mr. Wallace wanted to give a statement regarding that.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. All right, Mr. Mullis, if you are there and would like to address the board, you're welcome to do so at this time.
Good morning. We appreciate the board providing us the opportunity to discuss the basis for the letter of concern being issued in this case. As noted, the inspection was detailed, contained sufficient information, and that none of the original allegations were corroborated. The standards of practice have been complied with. The letter of concern raised two primary criticisms, And primarily this related to what we perceive to be ambiguities within the standards of practice and concerns with, I believe, the industry as a whole. The assessment report indicates that, you know, and for both of these, there's too many misconceptions in the industry as to compliance as to what the standards of practice are actually targeting. And we believe that it is better for the board itself to take those up and address the community as a whole, as opposed to attempting to single out Mr. Wilcox individually for these. The first one relates to compatibility under section 8.1D. In our report, the way it was organized had four different sections that related to the electrical breakers. Under compatibility, the comment or the review was targeted at whether or not the systems were compatible with one another. And there they found no compatibility issues. However, when it came to amperage on the circuit breakers, there were separate comments made that those were incompatible. So the compatibility may not have been under the subsection of the report that said, quote, compatibility. All it references was that the breakers were compatible with the service level, with the service panel. But if we actually go and look at the report as a whole, we see that there is a specific comment that the amperage was not appropriate and the circuit breakers were improper and that should have been inspected by an electrician and replaced if necessary. That complies with the spirit and goal. The form of a report is not what is specified under the SOPs. The inspectors are allowed to break those up into separate categories, and the importance or the question should be, were the comments, was it a proper inspection was done, was the information provided? What I am not hearing is that there was something found in the field during the inspection that wasn't identified in the report, and before we issue a letter of concern, that should be a standard that's addressed. If everything's been identified within the report, we shouldn't be having a letter of concern being issued. So if we look at the actual report, it was identified under for section 8.1D. It may not have been into the section of compatibility, but as the inspector noted, he perceives a misunderstanding in the general community as to what that means, and I believe that it should be addressed community-wide, not targeting out Mr. Wilcox. And secondly, the other section of the report that's being questioned is under 11.1E. And under that standard of practice, it is called upon for the inspector to look at separation walls, ceilings, and doors between a dwelling unit and an attached garage for another dwelling unit. The report here admittedly commented on the walls and the doors and the ceilings within the garage. What the criticism was that it did not specifically reference fire walls. And it's notable that the SOP does not use the word fire. And that is the criticism of our report, is that we don't specify and reference the word fire and just discuss the walls within the garage in that separation wall. Now, I believe if you're gonna give a letter of concern, it needs to be clear that we want to have the word fire wall included. And the difficulty here comes down to, well, how do you accept a fire wall? The fire rating is not something that is going to be visible. It's within the interstitial space of those walls. What type of drywall, what type of paint, all those things go into a fire rating and how that is constructed, the type of insulation, how thick the wall is. Is it a 1 hour? Is it a 2 hour? What is the code requirement? Those are a lot of different aspects that go into an evaluation as to what is the firewall. And I personally, I believe that concern is why we don't see a firewall. We just see a separation wall. And whether there is anything patently observable that would impact that breaking point between units or a garage. In this case, we identify the fire door being appropriate. We identify that there's nothing visually wrong with the separation walls, or that there's nothing about holes or penetrations that appear to be unsealed. All the visual aspects of that wall are appropriate. Once again, the report doesn't have any deficiencies, and the assessor report, the inspection report, doesn't identify and say that there was anything missed. So we have an inspection here that met all the requirements, identified all of the concerns, and we're kind of getting to technical aspects of this that are addressing the industry as a whole, not Mr. Wilcox. And if there is a decision that we need to have reports talk about fire separation walls and have those specifically referenced, its capability for protecting against fire and whether it meets codes or for 1 hour or 2 hour rating, then that needs to be patently stated, because otherwise we get into selective prosecution. And in our opinion, a letter of concern, while it's non-disciplinary, it definitely does impact Mr. Wilcox, and he takes pride in his work. And we're hoping that this doesn't just fall into technicality. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Mullis, for that presentation. We appreciate that. Mr. Smith, I believe you would like to...
Yeah, I've got a question. As you stated, I'm looking at the report here, and right under page 9 of 50 on the report, under electrical panel, second sentence says breakers and distribution lines appear to be properly sized. So that might be a little confusing at that point. If, in fact, the breaker size was incorrect, what you stated.
What was wrong here was under the breaker was that there was it's under section 6. It said that there is a double pole breaker on a single pole circuit. So that was the deficiency that was noted. And that would be on in the report, page 33 of the report.
All right, I thought you said amperage was wrong for the size wiring.
I apologize, but yeah, it's under the breakers. It's the double pole breaker on a single pole. That was the deficiency identified.
Okay.
Mr. Smith, any other questions for your position on the letter of concern?
I think a letter of concern is warranted. After the evaluations and all that, I think it's appropriate.
It also is consistent with previous investigations when we find items of diminished, I can never say that word properly, nature, that still warrants a letter of concern given, and we appreciate Mr. Mullis's comments regarding potential ambiguity. However, this still is consistent with our past enforcement action relative to that.
And just to remind the board as well, a letter of concern is a non-disciplinary resolution to a case.
Thank you, Mr. Mullis. So the comment by Mr. Mullis that this will adversely affect the respondent, I don't see how that would actually be the case, since it is not a disciplinary action. Right. Any further questions by the board? If not, we'll entertain a motion to issue a letter of concern.
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. I'd like to make a motion that we accept staff recommendation and issue a letter of concern for HI 24012.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Do you have a second?
This is Keith Smith. I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any final discussion by the board? All right. All those in person in favor, please say aye.
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 Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. That motion has been approved. Thank you, Mr. Mullis, for presenting before the board today.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. All right. Moving on to item agenda item 8B3, HI 24010. This is for Jeremy Nolan. I do believe that Mr. Nolan is here in person. Mr. Nolan, if you would like to come to the podium, I know that you mentioned that you're available for questions, but just in case we do have a question for you, just saves a step. Mr. Perry, would you mind giving a brief synopsis for the board?
Hello. In August, the board received a complaint alleging the respondent conducted a home inspection in Prescott in September of 2019, in which he failed to identify serious structural defects, building rot, which resulted in purchasing a home they would not have purchased. It also was alleged that he failed to probe structural components where deterioration was suspected, and it included exterior structured log walls as a cabin and on the buildings and the beams. It was also alleged that he failed to probe the rot that continued to spread, and that he failed to notice water damage that was in the home. When I received the investigation, the complaint was from approximately 4 years earlier when he worked for another company. A separate case was open for that company that you guys heard from me, I think last month or the month before. And that was where the initial statement came in from. So we got the statement from his old boss that complaint, you guys adjudicated, and then we moved on. For his formal response, we received that, and then it was sent to an EAC. So during the EAC, hang on one second. They found that the initial complaint was unfounded, but found 8 deficiencies identified in his home inspection report. They believed they were de minimis, I promise that, in nature, but one member recommended peer reviews, the others just recommended a letter of concern.
Thank you, Mr. Parrott. Mr. Noll, you understand the letter of concern and what that entails. Are you in agreement with that finding, or do you wish to make any sort of statement on your behalf?
I would agree with the letter of concern. At the time, I was not necessarily in control of the flow of the software, the verbiage of the software, a lot of the check boxes, the items that met the standards, but how we reported on certain things, even though I could have said something and made an adjustment to that had I brought it up at the time for cabins specifically that don't have AC, don't have things. They're kind of a beast of their own, if you will. And so being as I could have had some control.
Might make it that last sentence, your microphone cut out.
Yeah. So being as I could have said something and made some adjustments, I agree with the letter of concern, even though time period and everything else being taken into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. We really appreciate that very forthright statement.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Smith.
Just for the record, I know Jeremy from the past, and I think I can act impartial, but I do have a couple questions here.
Please go ahead.
Hello, Jeremy. Hey, on this software, are you using the software right now?
I am.
Have you modified it to adjust all these areas that were missed?
Absolutely. No longer working for that company anymore. I've gone out on my own. The template that I use, the boilerplate now, is completely different. It's all my own.
And you just referenced the supplement checklist to make sure that it's correct.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other questions by the board? If not, we'll entertain a motion for issuing a letter of concern.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. Make a motion to accept the letter of concern for HI-24-010.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We have a motion. We have a second.
Dr. Campbell will second.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell. Any final discussion? All right, those in person in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, so that motion has passed. Thank you for coming in. Appreciate your time. All right, let's move on to the last of our letters of concern items under Section 8B. This is HB4. Case HI-24-005, Bruce Scott Hubbard. It's ready. You don't have to go anywhere.
We're still here?
All right. So would you please give us a brief synopsis of the complaint, and we will hear from the individual here today.
In August, the board received a complaint alleging the respondent conducted a home inspection in Scottsdale and made inaccurate and false statements on the report. They allege respondent made comments to a fire sprinkler suppression system without the qualifications to do so. When I received the case for investigation, the real estate agent stated that they were upset that a home inspection was conducted and that comments were made regarding the fire sprinkler suppression system without qualification and wanted compensated. When we requested information back from the respondent, I'll let him address that. We ended up getting that, and after being assessed initially, we received the information that we asked for the second time around and got the assessment. And then, so it was, the assessor wanted it with the new information to be a letter of concern for one clerical omission, a system observation omission, and a component observation omission. That's why the letter of concern was.
Thank you, Mr. Parrott. Mr. Hubbard, would you please state your name and if you have a comment to make, we'd like to hear it now.
My name is Bruce Scott Hubbard.
and I do have a comment I'd like to make. I also have a handout that I'd like to give to the board that would go over what I part of my statement. First part of my statement is, first, I'd like to just thank the board and staff for approving a request I made last month to postpone until today. My 90-year-old father had a bad fall and a couple days before the meeting, and so we were able to postpone that meeting to today, and I thank you very much for that that accommodation. With that being said, there's no numerous problems, not only with the complaint itself, but with the way that I feel that the board has handled this investigation to this point. First of all, I don't believe that the Board of Technical Registration has the proper jurisdiction to adjudicate the complaint about a fire sprinkler system. I believe that the board staff determined that I was a victim of a frivolous complaint instead of doing justice by promptly closing the frivolous complaint at the earliest possibility. The board staff victimized me by creating an equally frivolous complaint on its own against me. The BTR assessor had called me belligerent for simply defending myself against frivolous allegations. Instead of acknowledging that I did nothing wrong, the BTR scrutinized my entire report to see if they could find something I did wrong. But they could not find anything, so the assessor obfuscated his recommendation and confused the board into thinking that there was a violation when there was not one. When I responded to the first assessment, I responded with screenshots, which is something that I'm going to give to you today, showing the items the assessor claimed that I missed but were clearly present in my report. The board reviewed it again, and the assessor still could not find anything wrong with my report except for those two violations. So I'd like to go through those frivolous violations to show you that they were not missed in my report. I brought a handout that I'll be passing out in just a moment. I'd also like to say that if the board does not want to dismiss this case as frivolous, then I don't feel that I was properly adjudicated through an enforcement advisory committee or an informal compliance council. So I'd like to hand out my handout now.
Mr. Chair, if you want to look at that, we'll have to take a pause for a minute as we send it to our virtual board members and make sure you all get one. So
I was just about to say, why don't you make some copies and send that out. Since that's probably going to take a few minutes, we could go ahead and, while that's being done, move to another case while we wait, just so we're not all sitting here staring at each other. And we can come back to that one. So don't go far. And we can come back to that one if anyone
Mr. Chair, just for the purposes of efficiency, are there any other materials that you intend to give to the board just so we can make sure everyone gets everything at the same
time? No, sir. That is the only handout that I have.
Thank you, Robert. Yeah.
Let's make sure.
We have some extras.
Stephen, did you get a copy of this?
Yeah.
Why don't we have at least the evaluators?
We have extra copies.
Yeah.
All right. While we wait for that to be done, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item on our agenda, which is a complaint proposed for resolution with signed consent agreement. So this is agenda item 8C1. Which is HI-24-030. Mr. Heat, if you'd like to give us a brief synopsis.
Good morning to the board. This is case H-24-030. The board opened a complaint alleging that on or about September 19, 2023, the respondent submitted a renewal application in which he answered no to the question asked if he had been investigated or disciplined by the regulatory agency since his last renewal and failed to disclose Board Order HI-23-008. According to Board Order HI-23-008, Respondent entered into a board order on or about January 24th, 2023 for Respondent failing to disclose a criminal conviction on his home inspector renewal application. A proposed consent agreement was offered to the Respondent, to which he did sign.
Any comments or questions by the board? If not, we can go ahead and get a motion to accept this signed consent agreement.
This is Dana Clutt. I'd like to motion to accept the signed consent agreement for case HI-24-030.
Thank you, Ms. Clutt. We have a second.
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. I'd like to second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. Any final discussion? All right. All those in person in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. That signed consent agreement resolution has been accepted. Are we good with sending, or do we want to go to another case? Okay, we'll do another case. All right. Moving on then to item 8C2, which is case AL-24-002, Victoria Lopez, along with the alarm agent and Casa Linda Security. So this one's yours too, so.
Yes, sir. At its August 22nd, 2023 board meeting, after reviewing information related to case AL-23-002, the board directed staff to open a complaint against Respondent. It is alleged that Respondent and Respondent Alarm Business conducted alarm advertisement, alarm sales, and alarm monitoring from December 2022 through April 3rd, 2023 without registration with the board. Board records show that Respondent's controlling person was granted April 3rd, 2023, and Respondent firm became active owner about April 3rd, 2023. On March 28, 2024, board records show the Respondent's alarm agent was granted. A consent agreement was proposed and signed by the Respondent.
Thank you, Chief. Any comments or questions by the board? If not, we have a resolution for signed consent agreements. Can we get a motion?
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. I'd like to accept the staff recommendation for accepting the signed consent agreement for AL-24-002.
Okay, Mr. Gilmore, do we have a second?
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I'll second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any final discussion? Those in person in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, so that motion is passed. One more, or Kurt, are we good?
Dr. Campbell, did you receive the item via email for HI-24-005?
Not yet. Give me one second to refresh. Yes.
Okay. Then I believe we can go ahead and resume. So, Mr. Hubbard, if you wouldn't mind coming back up to the podium.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I was wondering if we might have a few minutes of reading time allotted for this, just to make sure I can digest it properly.
I agree. question for you under the conclusion here that Mr. Hubbard has, where it says it was absolutely improper for the assessor to acknowledge there is not a reason for EAC and then recommend one anyway. Typically, we do have two assessors that review cases. Is that the case? Was that the situation in this case?
No, so we have one home inspector assessor as board staff that would review this.
And it is not uncommon that an EAC may still be called even if the assessor potentially may say that there may not be a reason, but there may be other reasons for an EAC beyond just that initial application.
Right. It would from the initial allegation or anything found in the during the assessment in the full home inspection report.
Right, which was the case with the previous three cases under the same agenda section.
Correct. Yes.
I just wanted for everyone to be clear on that.
And also, Mr. Chair, if I may say, just to remind the board again, I know I've discussed this with the board in the past, but as the board is a regulatory board and this isn't a civil court or any forum like that, it's not at all unusual for a complaint to come in, for an evaluation to be done, and find that the original allegations are unsubstantiated, but in review find that there are other issues that need to be looked into, because again, this is a licensing and regulatory issue and not a civil or criminal court.
Right, just to carry that further, Mr. Donald, this board is tasked and charged with the protection of the health, safety, and welfare of the public, and so if we do come across something during an investigation, although not necessarily part of the original allegation, if there is something that rises to that potential level, we have a responsibility to act on that. So again, that's just for, again, clarification.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. In fact, the board is specifically statutorily authorized to open its own investigations should it become aware of anything that might constitute a potential violation of the board's statutes or rules. And you are 100% correct. The purpose of the board is to protect public health, safety, and welfare.
And Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I have a question for Scott. According to this letter here, can you go over the BTR's authority on requesting documents?
Certainly. The BTR is statutorily authorized to conduct investigations. It is authorized to issue subpoenas, and those subpoenas can be enforced in any court in Arizona. And as a matter of fact, the board is authorized, if a subpoena is not complied with, to go to court, and the court can find an individual in contempt of court. So the board does have full investigative authority issued by the legislature through its statutes.
So I guess my question is, from what I understand, is a request for the work agreement was asked, and then you did not provide initially because you didn't think the BTR has that authority. Is that correct?
No, sir. Originally, I had a confidentiality agreement with my client, who he requested to me in writing that I not give any documents to anyone other than himself or to his buyer, to his real estate agent. And so that was my original basis for not giving over the inspection report or the inspection agreement. So that there wasn't a subpoena that was issued. I was not given any sort of a recourse above this board or the Superior Court to determine whether that was a reasonable request. For a subpoena, it should be something that is relevant to the case. And clearly, in that subpoena, they were asking for unnamed documents and other things. And I reluctantly did send over my inspection agreement to show that I did have one and to show that I did meet the standards. That was one of the things that I wanted to clarify. Before we get started on this document, I believe I heard Mr. Perry say at the beginning, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that part of this letter of concern was regarding the clerical omissions, and after I gave that to the board and it was reviewed, I believe that those clerical omissions were then satisfied. So I don't know if that was part of the letter of concern. So I thought I heard Mr. Perry say that it was. So I would ask that question of him now.
Well, I just wanted clarification because this seems to be like the second time we've heard where a home inspector did not want to provide their work agreement to the enforcement or to the BTR for their review. And Scott, am I correct? I mean, we've got every right to see that.
Yes, again, this is a regulatory agency and not a not a civil or criminal court. And as a matter of fact, a subpoena is the absolute final stage with somebody who is refusing to provide information to the board. Licensed professionals who are licensed with the agency, it is a normal investigative procedure to request documents from them. And typically, individuals comply with the licensing authority through whom they hold a professional license. Again, going to a subpoena is a pretty unusual stage where you have somebody who is refusing to provide information to their own licensing authority regarding a consumer complaint that came in.
So on December 29th, when the assessment returned, there were seven deficiencies. Clerical omission, failed to include purpose and scope, failed to include date of inspection, failed to include name and certification, failed to include firm address, failed to include notation that describes inspection. In February, after the redacted contract was provided after the subpoena, one clerical omission was still there, failed to include purpose and scope. That's SOP 2.2A.1. And then the system observation error and the component observation error were still present after it was reassessed.
Mr. Hubbard, would you acknowledge that that is a legitimate item that Mr. Perry is referring to?
No, I don't believe that it's a legitimate item with regards to the alleged clerical error, with regards to not stating the purpose. It clearly, in my contract, it states the purpose of the home inspection, which states that it is in conformance with the Board Technical Registration Standard Operating Procedure. So I don't know why that would still be alleged that I didn't provide that, but that wasn't a part of my contract.
Now, Mr. Perry, I believe you were referencing that in the report, not in the contract. Is that correct?
Just off the assessment. We took the initial assessment with the information we got that had the redacted parts to it, got it reassessed again, and then that was still, he just did the assessment from scratch again, and that was still in there with the other two.
Understood. Thank you.
And Mr. Hubbard, just to be clear on the process, when there's a violation filed, they're not picking on you by looking at your report. That's standard stuff. So even though the main complaint may not be substantiated, they still have to look at the whole report to make sure that's what we do.
I recognize that.
Okay. Mr. Harvey, you understand that a letter of concern is non-disciplinary, so this does not show up in your future. You don't have to disclose it in future renewals of the board. This is the lowest level of response that this board can offer. I just want to make sure that that is clear.
I recognize that as well.
Mr. Sheriff, I may point out also one additional thing about a letter of concern is that a letter of concern does not involve any repayment of investigative costs or recovery of fees for the board. It is strictly a non-disciplinary resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. That is a very good point to point out. Does the board have any questions or further comments for the respondents, both based on the report we have and the additional information that you provided for us today?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Stephen a question. You got a copy of those corrections. Did you see that your second time around? Did you address those?
I'm Steve Von Herrenkrook,
the board report assessor. What we just saw, I was kind of shocked at what I just saw. Not shocked, but I don't remember seeing the second line. You had it with you.
The
Disciplinary
Attorney.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have it.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, on his objection number 3 on page 2, the location of the exhaust vent. I know one of these was in the report. I'm not so sure about the other one. I really don't recall. I don't have the report in front of me, but the other one, I'm not sure.
Board have any further questions for the respondent? All right. Hearing none, we do have a motion, or excuse me, we do have a staff recommendation for issuing a letter of concern. I'm open to a motion to that effect or any other further discussion by the board.
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I'd like to propose that we accept the letter of concern for HI 24-005.
Just to clarify that, Mr. Smith, you are saying that you are accepting staff's recommendation.
Yeah, I am.
Issue that letter of concern.
Yes.
Just want to clarify. All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. I'd like to second the motion.
Okay, Mr. Gilmore, do we have any final discussion by the board? Hearing none, those in person who are in favor, please say aye.
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 Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you, sir, for coming in.
Thank you for your time.
All right, that concludes the letters of concern section of the enforcement agenda. We've got one more under item 8C, which is 8C3. That is HR23034, Stephen Rodriguez. If you wouldn't mind just giving us a brief synopsis of the complaint.
Good morning. The board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting a home inspection in Ajo, Arizona, failed to mention 3 outbuildings on the property, failed to report, this is the allegations, failed to report on termite activity in one of the outbuildings, failed to report on termite activity in the attic, failed to report on the exposed wiring in the attic, failed to report on the plumbing damage under a sink, failed to report on faulty washer hookups, failed to report on the fire hazard caused by underrated gas stove piping, failed to report on faulty shower drains, failed to report on the leaking hose bib, and failed to report that only one source of water could be run at a time, and failed to report on a toilet that was not flushing adequately. Reached out to Alleger. Alleger indicated that a contractor had conducted some repairs for her, and the contractor verified to her that these are things that our respondent should have caught. Did reach out to that contractor. Turns out he's also a home inspector as well. And he provided information that, in his opinion, there were several items that our respondent should have caught on to. Respondent's response made the argument that the outbuildings were not included as part of his home inspection report, which our standards do not require outbuildings to be included. He also made the distinction between a home inspection report and the termite inspection report. He had done a termite inspection on the entire property, including the outbuildings, and that was a separate report altogether, which is not under our purview. After collecting all of the information that we could, we gave it to our assessor. Our assessor found that several of Alleger's initial complaints did have merit, and also identified 23 additional potential discrepancies in the report. That being the case, we had an EAC meeting. In the EAC meeting, our respondent acknowledged that he acknowledged, I believe, 17 of the 23 items as being missing. As it turns out, according to our respondent, the reason those items were missing was a combination of a couple of issues that were going on that day. He had a family emergency. His I believe it was his grandmother was terminally ill and in the hospital. He was reasonably distracted. He did acknowledge that he probably should not have done the inspection at all that day because of that fact, but moved forward anyhow. He also indicated that his tablet that he was using to mark his findings had a glitch, and because of that glitch, he mistakenly deleted several sections of the report, which included the heating and the cooling aspects, as well as the laundry room, which most, of, almost all of which resulted in those 17 items being missing that he acknowledged. He did acknowledge that that was the version that he gave his client, and he was unaware of it being missed until much later on when he received our notice of investigation, kind of indicating that he did not review it before turning it over to the client. The EAC committee determined that they verified 20 of the 23 discrepancies. They acknowledged the mitigating factors that he had family issues going on at the time, and that there was a technical difficulty, but they were very concerned about it being presented to the client without being reviewed first and without those being taken care of. They also substantiated two of the initial allegations. One, that there was loose wiring, open loose wiring in the attic. Our respondent indicated that he was not able to access the attic fully, which would be reasonable under our statutes, except for the fact that he didn't disclose that in the report itself thoroughly. The other thing was faulty washer hookups. The EAC made the distinction that although a washer is an appliance that is not covered under statutes, the hookups are part of the plumbing that should have been checked on. So they did substantiate that. The EAC recommended peer reviews, a penalty, and formal education for report writing. We drafted a consent agreement including those factors, and our respondent has since signed it and is willing to accept the consent agreement as written.
Thank you. All right, so we have a signed consent agreement by Mr. Rodriguez. Board, any comments or questions before we go ahead and move forward with the motion? All right, I will entertain a motion to accept the signed consent agreement.
Sorry, we already have
a
signed consent agreement, but I missed that.
It is signed,
yes,
and it is for our
acceptance. Yes. Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales. I propose a motion to accept the signed consent agreement for HI 23-034.
I apologize. I just got kicked out of the meeting, and I wanted to verify that it was still running. Hayden, do you have anything on your side showing the meeting is not running? I see it on the screen still.
No, it's still running fine for me.
May just be a Wi-Fi thing. I just wanted to verify before we continued.
Dr. Campbell, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, very good. Don't know why Curtis. All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith. I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. We have a motion and a second. Any final discussion? All right, those in person in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, the motion has been approved. All right, moving on to Section D of our enforcement agenda. I'd like to go ahead, since we do have Mr. Putt, I believe, is here in person. Is that right? If you'd like to come forward, we're going to go ahead and take these out of order. We're going to take both agenda items D2 and D3, given that they are interrelated. And I do believe that we have both Mr. Cartel and Ms. Campbell here to speak on both of those. So I'd like a brief summary of those by our two investigators, please. Whoever would like to go first.
I guess I'll go ahead and go first. Let me find the right page here. Board received a complaint alleging that respondent failed to record a record of survey in Pima County, Arizona within the required time frame of no later than 90 days after the completion of the survey. This was filed by another land surveyor who had, according to the alleger, had come across this information while doing a survey on an adjacent property. The complaint was that the report was not, or that the survey was not recorded, and this was several years after the previous survey. During the investigation, we found that a version of the survey was actually in the record under an easement document. Later on, we found that it was not filed by respondent, but possibly by the homeowner. But it was, in fact, in the record. Additionally, respondent had filed the survey once it was very shortly after it was brought to his attention, but it was still after the 90 days as required. Sent it out for assessment. The assessors were concerned that it was not recorded on time. Both assessors indicated that the easement document that included his survey being in the record did not satisfy the requirements of recordation for several reasons, one of which was that it was filed under a different search criteria. It was not searchable as normal, and that it was a compressed version and not entirely legible. So we had an EAC based on those assessments. During the EAC, respondent acknowledged that he did not record the survey until it was brought to his attention. He also acknowledged that he did not record the easement document that was recorded earlier on, and he suggested that it was likely the homeowner that did it for other purposes. He specified that the easement document was not filed for the purpose of recording his survey, and that he had no intention of that being the recorded version of his survey. Our respondent had indicated that he recorded it as soon as it was brought to his attention, and added that he's doing an audit, a self-initiated audit of his records, and has full intentions of recording everything he finds that has not been recorded as of yet. The EAC committee substantiated the allegation in that the easement document was not did not qualify as the recordation. They acknowledged that he did record it as soon as it was brought to his attention, but that it was significantly past the 90 days. So they did substantiate it. We drafted a consent agreement to include both cases, and a respondent has declined to sign it and has offered an alternative view, which has been provided to you as well, in which he's requesting that a letter of concern or dismissal be considered as opposed to the consent agreement. The consent agreement was written and drafted with for the purpose of being consistent with prior like cases in which we have strived to be consistent in giving like penalties for like situations. There have been cases where recordation was an issue and we issued the similar penalties and whatnot that are represented in the consent agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Cartel. Ms. Campbell.
Regarding case P23112, the board received an additional complaint alleging that respondent failed to record a 2014 ALTA survey in Pima County, Arizona. Respondent did acknowledge the oversight and provided verification that he recorded the survey as soon as he was notified by the board. Two case assessments were conducted with this specific survey, and no additional deficiencies were found regarding the survey. A joint consent agreement was drafted and provided to respondent for consideration, as mentioned, and respondent has provided a counter proposal, which has already been mentioned and has been provided to the board for consideration.
Thank you. Mr. Putt, if you'd like to state your name and your comment on the case, please.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is David Putt, RLS 13019. I'd like to thank the board of technical registration members for working to protect the safety, health, and welfare of the public. And thank you to Daniel and the EAC for their investigation of the complaints. So it's my understanding that you received a copy of my counterproposal. Is this correct? Thank you. As I stated in my counterproposal, I believe the disciplinary action outlined in the proposed consent agreement to be unjust and unnecessarily harsh. The proposed disciplinary action would be suitable for those surveyors that demonstrate a failure to learn from the past, a disinterest in correcting their mistakes, or in cases where harm to the public has been caused. It is incumbent upon the board to consider all the facts of a complaint. The board has the latitude to consider extenuating circumstances, including corrective action already taken to amend past mistakes and contributions made to the survey profession as a whole. The complaints were filed over a year ago. I feel like I've been on probation since receiving the complaints over a year ago. It has taken an emotional and monetary toll on myself, my family, and my business. These complaints should have been handled between professionals and should have never been taken to the board. I'm a charter member of the Arizona Professional Land Surveyors Association and have been an active member since its inception. APLS was created to serve as an organized way for surveyors to civilly discuss differences of opinion and learn from one another. The Arizona Boundary Survey minimum standards were not prepared as a hammer to harass and punish fellow surveyors trying to be honest land surveyors. The standard of practice has been to contact the other surveyor to discuss the survey if there was an issue. Filing a complaint was a last resort if the other surveyor was unresponsive. This situation could have and should have been handled between the alleger and myself without the need to file a complaint. Filing a complaint should not be done as a punitive act. For over 42 years, until the alleger's complaints, there had not been a single complaint against me, either from clients or colleagues. And my professional judgment has never been called into question. In the cases in question, there's been no harm to the safety, health, and welfare of the public or other surveyors. There were no material discrepancy with the survey work or alternate locations for the corners. There was no difference of opinion in this case. I acknowledge that I was deficient in recording the surveys. As I have stated, I have instituted new policies to prevent this from happening in the future. I am addressing any unrecorded past surveys of my own accord at great cost and time to me, so no probation or fines are necessary. Well, I cannot go back in time to record all my surveys within the 90-day period after completion. I am working to address this issue to the best of my ability. I am making amends. The proposed disciplinary action is unwarranted and provides no opportunity for ameliorated practices, as I have already initiated such practices. I am appealing to the board to consider issuing a letter of concern or dismissal of the complaints. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Putt. We really appreciate that. I'd like to ask both for Orlean and for our board member, who is a land surveyor, Ms. Klett, to speak on two things. The first, Orlean, is if you could provide a little context relative to the level of the enforcement action that is proposed and how that is consistent with the matrix that we typically use. I believe that's important that Mr. Putt understand how that is related to that, and then obviously we'd like to hear from Ms. Klett afterwards related to the technical side of things.
Of course. So this consent agreement for the combined cases is a standard typical case that we've seen, that the board has seen. The guidance document that was just approved has a set amount for each unrecorded survey. So this consent agreement is based on the matrix of the guidance, and of course with other prior board actions.
Mr. Chair, if I may just add to what Ms. Luro was just saying, it is in line with the disciplinary matrix guidance document. It is important to note, however, that it is a guidance document that merely ensures that the starting point for the board is consistent with prior board activity. The board should look at the individual characteristics of each case as well to determine whether there are aggravating or mitigating circumstances or the appropriate resolution to a case. That way the board is best able to act in conformity with prior decisions while still taking into consideration the individual characteristics of each case.
Thank you, Mr. Donald. Ms. Klett, I'd love to get your input on this case.
Yeah, hi, this is Dana Klett. Hi again.
Hi.
My question is, has there been a situation in the past where it's been a repetitive complaint brought upon another surveyor for the same, the same situation where there's not filed or recorded surveys? I don't know, does anybody know if that's happened before?
Chair, as I recall, this ledger has filed similar complaints against other surveyors. So there is a track record here, to answer your question. How many, I don't know, but I remember the ledger making previous or filing previous violations along the same line.
And obviously, Mr. Gilmore is our longest serving board member, so has the best context. Longest serving? Okay. And of course, you know, one of the issues, Mr. Putt, is that, you know, regardless of how or why that ledger has filed those complaints, we can't get into the why. All we can do is that when we receive a complaint, we have to investigate it thoroughly and carry forward the standard of care that this board has to do. So again, we can't speak to why a ledger does it, but we can only act on information that comes in, and we then have to obviously do those investigations and apply that methodology. Now, that being said, I guess, Ms. Klett, based on the, again, we're looking at a matrix as a starting point, as Mr. Donald said. In your opinion, do you feel that there is anything that would exacerbate or mitigate the proposed consent agreement as far as what is offered?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, before you respond to that, Dana, you're welcome to do that, but I just want to remind the board members that if you feel that there's a need to receive legal counsel, that you're always welcome to go into executive session for legal counsel and advice.
This is Dana Clyde again. Just based on the amount of complaints that have been coming in, I'm inclined to agree with offering the consent agreement.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question. How hard is it to file these plan surveys? I mean, is there a cost? How do you do it? What's the process?
It's all digital now, so it's just a filing fee. It's $25 roughly.
Not necessarily. It's digital in Pima County, perhaps in Maricopa County, not in Santa Cruz County, not in Cochise County. So, not necessary.
So in that situation, you would send in your Mylars, stamped Mylars, with the fee associated to it?
That's correct.
Is it just a nominal fee, or is it?
Yeah, it's the fee is not the, is normally not the problem. It's usually included in the contract amount. It's just the fact that it was not done in this situation.
And both of these cases are in Pima County, so where there is electronic filing.
There is now, but there was not at the time. And the process has changed over time, much as everything has changed over time.
So on your letter, though, I noticed that you went back and found a handful that you did not record, correct?
That's correct, and I'm still in that process, but it almost sounds like, to me, I would have been money ahead to not do that and just wait till someone finds them and then files a complaint. But that's not who I am.
I don't understand. That's part of the job and the requirement. You're supposed to do that. So at the end of the job, don't you just always file it? I mean, I don't know how you could not complete the job. What was the reason that you wouldn't file that?
Well, yes, generally that's the way it happens. Sometimes one gets busy and things get put aside. And often with surveys, as you move along, even though you might think you're complete with that survey, the project is still kind of in process and in limbo, and time keeps marching on, and the 90-day period keeps marching on. And yet the client isn't ready to have that survey necessarily completed. So then the argument is, when is the survey complete? Is it complete when the pins are set? Is it complete when the map is recorded? Is it complete when you receive payment?
I'd like to go into executive
session. Make a motion to go into
executive. Yes. This is Dana Clyde. I'd like to motion to go into executive session.
Would that be for legal advice?
Yes. For legal advice.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to remember if we need a second for that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to second that. Scott Sales.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. All right. With that, we'll go ahead and move into executive session.
We need a vote.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So those in person in favor of going to executive session for legal advice regarding a specific case, please say aye.
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 Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Is anyone opposed to going into executive session? All right, hearing none. We'll be back in a little bit, so if you all just wait patiently, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Bert, would you mind doing a roll call?
Mr. Kaleka?
Present.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Mr. Nesgood?
Present.
Mr. Gilmore?
Present.
Ms. Klett?
Present.
Ms. Hobick?
Present.
Mr. Smith?
Present.
Ms. Bohol?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Ms. Lindgren? Ms. Skanky? Hey, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Nate. Appreciate that. All right, so we have returned from receiving legal advice from our Assistant Attorney General. And I'd like for Ms. Klett, if she would like to report back out a little bit and some potential motion.
This is Dana Klett, and after receiving legal advice from our Attorney General, I'd like to continue this case to be reevaluated in 2 months and for you, Mr. Putt, to provide a list of all newly recorded surveys as of today's date, which is April 23rd, 2024, up until our next meeting, and all previously recorded surveys that you've been doing on your own.
Okay, I can do that.
And if I may,
could I also say one more thing? Just as a reminder, based on my accounting, I believe I've recorded 98% of my surveys, which means only 2% haven't been recorded, which, you know, human error, we're all human, doesn't sound terrible to me.
Okay, Mr. Dunbar, real quick, and that's part of why we are continuing this for 2 months, to provide you time to identify and bring forward those 2% or whatever outstanding ones are there. Mr. Dunbar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify for my own knowledge, just to make sure I understand the situation. Would this be in order to provide the licensee an opportunity to make sure the board is aware of all potential surveys that may not have been properly recorded in order to be able to dispose of them at one time through one potential resolution, as opposed to having various complaints come in or having to deal with various survey issues at different points?
Yes.
Thank you. Just want to make sure I understood.
But you understand the nature of this continuance?
Yes, I think I understand. But I do have another question.
Okay, please.
So I do have one more complaint against me by the serial, the ledger. So is that going to be a part of this? Can we roll that into this?
We would. Again, we can't give you legal advice. All we can say is that we are asking that you take this time to provide us with any and all potential surveys that could be addressed under a modified, amended, or otherwise consent agreement.
And Mr. Chair, my understanding of Board Member Klett's motion would be that the board would table this then for 2 months and come back to review possible ultimate disposition of all possible surveys that the licensee has notified the board of. So that would resolve any other complaints that the board has received to date.
Or may receive, yes. Being that we're continuing, I don't think we need to do a motion on that. Is that correct, Mr. Donald?
It is correct. The board can simply pen this. Typically, if they pen it, it's for 1 month, but certainly the board could pen this for 2 months.
I believe Ms. Glad said 2 months, so we are going to continue this case, and we will take this back up again at our June meeting.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales, just for some logistics, we talked about 2 months. In order for us to be able to review the information and be able to provide some guidance, is the idea to try to wrap everything together in 2 months, in which we would need information from Mr. Putt sooner than that. I also want to make sure that, you know, that time frame is definitely agreeable by Mr. Putt, just to make sure that he's going to have adequate time to. I don't want to come back two months from now and say, oh, we need another month or two. I know it's been open for a while. I know you'd like it closed. I personally would like it closed as well. So I just want to make sure, you know, that we're all in a fair agreement here and everybody's charging down the same path.
Thank you for that clarification, Scott. And I think Orlean might be in a little bit of a panic, too. So we're asking for a list. Just for clarification too, Orlean, this would be a matter of the staff having to investigate all of these. So, but we would need to have it. This is true. If we would need to have it at least a few weeks prior to the board meeting that it would be scheduled for. So, if it ends up needing to be bumped, if there's not sufficient time to have it in the board packet or something, we can address that at the time. But hopefully not.
So 2 months for you, so it'd be 3 months for our July meeting.
Well, I would ask Mr. Putt maybe if that's sufficient. If 6 weeks is sufficient, you could get it back to the board staff in 6 weeks. That would probably give us time then to include it in the board packet and have it on what is this, my June meeting.
Yes, I'll work towards that, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So just again to clarify, Mr. Chair, and make sure I understand, that would be then a list provided to the board giving information about every survey that was not properly recorded as required by law so that the board could then effectively dispose of all of them at one time. Would that be correct?
That is the intention, yes, Mr. Holland.
Thank you.
So just to recap that, we'd like within 6 weeks that list from you, along with any other information that you wish to provide to the board, and that will be incorporated into the board packet such that we can address this at the June 2024. Okay.
Yes. Thank you for your consideration. And one last thing, go Cats.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question here. You just stated that there's another complaint that's been filed. Is it the same type of complaint? Okay.
Mr. Chair, one other thing.
The same ledger.
Just, again, from a legal standpoint, to make sure the board understands, the board will be able to resolve any of these surveys of which it is aware. However, if there are any surveys that the board is not told about, and the board resolves this through one consent agreement, and then another complaint comes in regarding a survey the board was not aware of, legally speaking, the board then would have to consider that a separate investigation with potentially different discipline because it was not aware at the time of the ultimate resolution of all of these.
That is 100% the intent, yes.
Okay. If I may, the additional case that he's speaking about, it's one of mine as well. It's currently out for assessment. The initial allegation is failure to record, but it is still out for assessment. So the possibility exists that the assessors will, hopefully not, but possibly find more than just the recordation being an issue with those. If that is the case, how would the board like that handled?
Mr. Cartel, is that just one survey, or are there several?
That would represent one survey, yes, sir.
I think we'll have to, once we see what that is, we can't make a hypothetical decision at this time. Okay. All right, well,
I do have one more clarification from me. So are you saying that it's more likely that it's going to be a consent agreement that you're going to be asking me to sign?
Potentially, it'll all depend on all the information at that time. So we can't tell you one way or the other until we have all that information.
All right.
Let's move on then to our next case. We have one additional individual who is wishing to speak to the board, and that is agenda item 8D5, which is case HI24-035, Mr. Ryan Phelps. Mr. Phelps, if you are online, would you please just confirm that you are there?
Yes, I am here.
All right, thank you so much. All right, then, let's move on. Mr. Eaton, if you would please give us a brief synopsis of the case.
Respondent's proposed consent agreement is in regards to his failure to disclose a pending investigation with the board on his home inspector renewal application. Respondent received communications via mail and email and was aware of the pending investigation at the time of his renewal for case HI23-023. A consent agreement was offered to the respondent, to which he declined to sign. Mr. Phelps is online to answer.
Phelps, can you please state your name and provide a brief statement related to this case?
Yes, my name is Ryan Phelps. And yes, I was aware of, as of February 13, 2023, I was made aware of a pending investigation based on a complaint from a seller. That complaint was found to be bogus, unjustified, is wrong, however you want to phrase it. So by the time my renewal came around in October of 2023, I was under the misunderstanding that the investigation was over with. I had not had any other communication. I had checked the website to see if I was under any pending investigation to just show that I was active. I, in good faith, answered the question on the renewal form about being under investigation by any regulatory agency. I answered in good faith no, because I, again, wrongly assumed that the investigation was over with. I've been licensed for 20 years. I've never had a complaint against me in all that time. This whole process did end up taking a year. I was never notified of the process, of the investigation, of the assessments, of a board having to take a vote or any of that. I was never given any process information. There is nowhere for me to check what the process is, or that I'm aware of anyway, nowhere to check the status of the next investigation. During this investigation about my potentially giving false statements. The investigator, he missed three scheduled phone calls with me. I had to reach out to him multiple times to try to get this settled. And finally, when I reached out to him and I said, I'm in this situation to begin with, is the lack of communication, the lack of information. Are we ever going to resolve this? Then he finally responded. So basically, it's just my ignorance and my lack of information, my lack of understanding of the process, which has led me now to be speaking to the board again. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Phelps. I appreciate that. I'm not sure if this is a question for Kurt, Judith, or me, but when an investigation is going on or a case is active and a case eventually is closed, how is a respondent notified so that they would know whether that is... Okay, you would kindly for the record, help explain that.
Yeah, so when, I'll go back a little. So when we receive a complaint, the complaint is assigned to an investigator who then provides a notice of investigation, a letter of hey, there's a complaint, via email and mail. Throughout the process, there's constant email communication, there's phone calls, there's all sorts of verbal and again, written communication. When it goes to the board, there's a notice of, to attend the board meeting for just like today. And then once the board makes a decision, there's also a letter that goes out based on the decision of the board. Everything via email and mail and certified mail in some circumstances.
Yeah, I was never given those steps throughout this process. I received the completed assessment on November 15th, which was after I had my renewal was due. And at that point, I was like, okay, well, then now it's done. And then on November 21st, I was notified of a board meeting. And I asked Mr. Eden, what is this board meeting about? I already received the completed assessment. Then he informed me, well, that's not binding until it's voted on. Again, I was given this information after the fact, and it was always new revelation. Like, oh, it's still not done. Oh, it's still not done. So, just the duration of this whole process, again, it took 11 and a half months to get finalized. I'm thankful that this particular one's only been 2 months so far. But again, there has not been regular, consistent communication or informing me of the process in any way. So until after, it was too late.
Thank you, Courtney.
I would just like to clarify that the previous case, he did respond to the complaint, so he was aware of the complaint. Thank you.
Yeah, I acknowledge that.
All right. Board, any other comments, questions? Currently, we do have staff recommendation to offer a proposed consent agreement. If it is not signed within 30 days, it would then go to a formal hearing. If no one has any further comments, I would entertain a motion to that effect.
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. I'd like to make a motion. They will accept the staff recommendation to offer a consent agreement for HI 24035.
And if not signed.
And if not signed in 30 days, this goes to hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Mr. Nesbitt. Any final discussion by the board?
Mr. Chair, this is Keith Smith.
Yes.
Letter of reprimand, what is that as far as a penalty? What does that entail?
There's no penalty attached to the letter of reprimand. That's just in the consent agreement as a stipulation.
Unlike a letter of concern, Mr. Smith, it is disciplinary. Any other questions?
A letter of reprimand, I'm just not really sure. I think the other two are good. I'm just kind of concerned about the reprimand part.
Again, that does follow the proposed matrices of enforcement.
Okay.
All right. For that
level of enforcement. I agree. That's my concern as well, the letter of reprimand. If I had been instructed and notified of the process, that would have been, and then I didn't abide by it, that's a different situation. Being reprimanded for something that I had no control over or informed about is my main concern. I'm totally willing to pay for a copy of the investigation. The fine that is on here seems a little excessive from what we're talking about, but it is what it is. The letter of reprimand seems a little unnecessary.
And just, excuse me, a little more clarification, if I can. Was there any communication from January, from the initial notice to him stating that you're still under investigation or anything, or was there a huge lapse in that time, like he's stating?
I will say that there was a lapse of about five months, yes, between May and October, yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, so Scott Sales, to kind of piggyback flip on that, looking at the date when it was signed, it looks like October 14th, 2023 is when he signed the renewal application. I guess, do we have information on when the, like prior to that, when was the last communication that was sent to him via email or phone call or yes, mail?
It was in May. There was no communication between May and November. It was 6 months.
Or staff, it was May 19th.
Mr. Chair, can I have a question here? In the original letter or notice that there is a complaint, what details are provided to the respondent to explain how long the process might take or when the complaint is officially closed by the board? I don't think I've seen one of those letters.
That detail is not in that letter, the notice of investigation.
Yeah, I've gone on the BTR website, trying to look for standards of procedures and investigations and so forth, and I can find nothing. Again, researching for any investigations ongoing or pending, there's no way to find that information.
And to the board, that information is on the website. The complaint process is on the website.
I couldn't find it.
This is Kurt Winter, Deputy Director. Under the Complaints tab on the website, there is a full numbered list of the whole process of the investigation process. Cases are confidential and open. We do not list open cases on our website because they are all confidential. When somebody is disciplined, that is what shows up on the website, is if somebody has been disciplined, if somebody's case is dismissed or a letter of concern is issued, they do not show up on the website. And all staff information is on the website to under contact us.
Any other comments?
Where can I find the procedures for investigations on the website?
Kurt, do you mind just repeating that for the respondent, Mr. Phelps?
Under for public on the navigation bar, click on complaint.
Submit complaint, okay.
Scroll down, and there should be a accordion name called the board's complaint process.
And because I don't have that in front of me, could you clarify that? Does it say when the complaint is officially closed by vote of the board? Or where does it indicate the official closure of the complaint?
It details steps of how a complaint proceeds and goes to the board. It can't be put on, you know, for searchable reasons. It's not going to be shown on the registrar until something's finalized and if there was a disciplinary action. So any progress of where the complaint is, anything that's going on, the investigator is accessible anytime, email, or phone.
Yes, I totally understand that until it's closed, it's not going to be searchable by the registrant or for the public record. But is there a procedural list of showing the close of the procedure?
On the board website, it does say that the board has the final decision authority, decision-making authority. Yeah, it does say that the board has the final decision, and it lists different options, routes that the board can take.
Thank you. That totally clarifies for me.
Yeah.
I think, Mr. Phelps, one of the issues as well is that if there's ever ambiguity or confusion related to a case that may or may not be still active, that it's incumbent upon the registrant to contact the board prior to filling out a renewal application to ensure 100% that a case is in fact closed. Again, that is also something that is the responsibility of the registrant to do.
And I don't disagree. I did not act in bad faith filling this out. I was working off an assumption, which is my fault. I wrongly assumed that something was handled or wasn't handled. You are correct. That falls on me, I guess, to follow up. As I've learned, if I don't follow up, things just disappear for 5, 6, 7 months at a time. So no communications whatsoever, unless I actively follow up. So I'm totally in agreement with that. Again, I guess my point is I didn't lie on my renewal. Why would I lie about a pending investigation with the board that I'm renewing with? I mean, this doesn't make any sense. I'm okay with a lot of the consent agreement, just not all of it, especially like I said, the letter of reprimand. I don't really think a formal letter in my file that, you know, I was did something wrong is necessary. You know, I'll pay a fine for not doing my full due diligence.
And Mr. Phelps, again, this is a proposed consent agreement. You are
under
no obligation to sign it. If you choose not to, within 30 days, it would go to administrative law judge for further review and hearing. So, again, that is the case here. You can choose to sign it. You can choose not to. It is entirely up to you. All right. Any final comments? We do have a motion. We do have a second. Any final comments by the board?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just offer the consent agreement, just removing the letter of reprimand.
Mr. Donald.
Well, if I may, the board certainly can modify it to make whatever offer the board would like to make. However, it would not be able to remove just the letter of reprimand, as the letter of reprimand would be a disciplinary action, and if there were to be any penalty, financial penalty, that would only be possible in a disciplinary action. So the option for the board as a letter of reprimand is the lowest possible level of discipline. The only other direction to go would be to a letter of concern, which is a non-disciplinary resolution.
So I guess, Mr. Smith, I don't know if you wish to modify that question or if you...
Well, I think, just learning that, I think a letter of concern would be enough, personally.
So currently we have a motion for the proposed consent agreement as is. We have to act on that motion. Well, I guess
that's
a little tricky then. Would we potentially, Mr. Donald, vote on Mr. Smith's proposal as... First, if that fails and we go forward with the consent agreement, how would you?
Why don't we have discussion before that? Anybody else?
That's what we're doing right now.
What the board would have to do, as there is a motion that has been seconded, there would have to be a vote on it. However, the board could vote down the motion if it wanted to. The board, in the meantime, is still in the discussion phase of that motion and certainly could discuss the option for a letter of concern. If the board wanted to go in that direction, the option would be to vote down the standing motion and then to consider a motion for a letter of concern in the case.
So in this case, if the motion were to pass, as is currently motioned and seconded, that would be the end of it. If it fails, then Mr. Smith's other motion could then be reviewed and voted on.
Well, there is one more fun aspect to it, actually, and that is because of where things are procedurally, as this is simply to offer a consent agreement, if the motion passes, there still could be a motion made by a board member to rescind the offer of a consent agreement, and then if that were seconded and voted upon. Either way, if the board were to find that it offered a consent agreement, but it then decided it didn't want to offer, it could still rescind and still offer a letter of concern.
Understood.
Okay.
Well, we have a motion. We have a second. At this point, I'd like to go ahead and carry that vote forward. Let's go ahead. Let's do a roll call vote. Hayden, if you would.
Mr. Kaleka?
Aye.
Mr. Sales?
Aye.
Mr. Nesgood?
Aye.
Mr. Gilmore?
Aye.
Ms. Klett?
Nay.
Ms. Hobig?
Nay.
Mr. Smith?
Nay.
Ms. Bohol?
Nay.
Dr. Campbell?
Nay.
Motion fails.
Thank you, Hayden. All right, so now that motion has failed, so if Mr. Smith wishes to make... Yes, Mr. Winter.
I would like to remind the board that you accepted a consent agreement for an earlier case or very similar situation.
While at the same time taking into consideration the individual characteristics of each case.
Yes.
All right, since that initial motion to propose a consent agreement failed, I am opening the board for an alternate motion. Looking at you, Mr. Smith.
Oh, I would like to propose that we... I have to rescind this?
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill.
Okay. To offer a consent agreement. Okay. I'm sorry, a letter of concern.
With nothing else. All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
What are you guys laughing at over there?
Mr. Smith made a motion. Do we have a second?
Sandy Bohol, I'll second that.
Thank you, Ms. Bohol. Any final discussion? All right, hearing none. Hey, if you would, one more time, roll call vote.
Mr. Klecka?
Nay.
Mr. Sales?
Aye.
Mr. Nesgood?
Aye.
Mr. Gilmore?
Nay.
Ms. Klett?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Bohol?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you, Dave. All right. Thank you, Mr. Phelps, for your... time to come and present to the board. Let's go ahead.
Thank you, Lauren, for your time.
Thank you. All right, we have two more items under item D. They are agenda items 8D1 and 8D4. We don't have anyone that is attending for those virtually online. So we can do this under one motion, which would be then to propose and offer a consent agreement and not sign within 30 days we proceed to hearing. Unless anyone has an objection to batching those together, I entertain a motion to that effect.
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. After reviewing the investigative report for AD1, it seems to me the respondent, even though they're not registered, they've been extremely difficult to communicate with and gone out of their way to ignore a request from our legislative team to address this properly. And when I look at the proposed consent agreement, it seems to me that the penalty, especially the cost of investigation, is low. I'm just curious, I mean, how that $20 million for the cost of investigation, all those calls are made up there, letter sent, it just seems surprisingly low based on what we've done in the past.
The calls probably, he didn't answer, so there wasn't much time that went into those. There was just a lot of times, but there wasn't an actual conversation, which, you know, 30-second voicemail maybe. Dan would be able to.
So that's correct. I only had one phone call when we had a conversation. That one lasted about 10 minutes. Other than that, they were very quick, left voicemails, sent emails, none of which really calls into that much time as far as strictly timing.
This is Scott Sales. Just looking more, I'm going to feed in a little bit more of what was mentioned there. So looking there, it's, you know, board staff reviewed what the registered contractors, ACC, LinkedIn, Facebook, their website, some other third-party references. You really uncovered all this, you know, looked under all the stones to try to find these folks. So I know there had been quite a bit of time in there, but whether it's reflected here, I personally appreciate all the stuff that's been done out there to really try to find this individual, or it seemed like it was quite the journey reading through the many back and forths, trying to call them. It almost potentially appeared that once you mentioned who you were, they were busy. It was weird. I kept seeing the same thing. Oh, I'm in a meeting, or this or that, based on the correspondence. So, it's unfortunate. It seems like they're really, I don't know, Jack.
Plus, they're advertising architect and engineering. Have they modified their website pursuant to your notification?
I was never actually able to access their website. I tried three separate times. Each time I got a warning that I was, one said that I was in danger of being infected with malware. Another time it said that it was blocked. So I was never actually able to inspect their website.
Not a very good website, then, it sounds like. Well, at the end of the day, you know, I'm going to defer to staff if you and the team feel that $90 is the sufficient cost, then so be it. I mean, I think you put in what you believe it is, so. But that is a good point, Mr. Gilmore.
Board members, Orlean and her staff track everything, so none of these fees are ever arbitrary. There's tracking on everything to account for all the time.
Thank you.
All right, any other, well, we don't have a motion yet, but if there's any further discussion, I'll entertain a motion for both D1 and D5.
Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales, this is a question for Mr. Donald. Just in reading through the information, it talks about, you know, you actually have the board staff had to actually interact or try to interact with the statutory agent related to this. But like I said, this person, did that go well? Did the statutory agent respond to everything that you were asking for, or was there still some runaround?
Just to make sure, are we still talking about Jason Scott, P24-026?
Yeah.
Okay, just wanted to make sure so I'm not giving information from a different case. So we tried reaching out to, I believe his name is Mr. Ahmad, we tried reaching out to him with everything we did have, including certified letters, and received no response whatsoever. I was able to track the certified letter that was sent out. Up to today, it was never delivered. So I'm not even sure if what I was able to get was an accurate address. One interesting thing was when I looked at the Arizona Corporation Commission, they listed an address out of Wyoming, which matched what we had already had from responding with the emails. It gave a second address out of Tucson. When I looked up that address, it's not actually their address. It's a third-party company that assists with out-of-state companies trying to get certified with Arizona. So I don't know if they serve as a middle go-between. But we didn't get a response from that one either. So all attempts to reach the statutory agent resulted in nothing, essentially.
Okay, that's kind of where I'm going with this. Is it would it be potentially prudent to reach out and let someone over at the Corporation Commission know that this statutory agent is maybe not serving the best will of folks here in Arizona?
Well, with the Corporations Commission, if you are not able to accomplish service upon a statutory agent for a company, you can serve the Corporations Commission itself at that point for the company. So you can effect service upon a corporation that is registered with the Arizona Corporations Commission by going directly to the Corporations Commission. But that would only be, again, if you're unable to obtain service through the statutory agent. In terms of taking part of an investigation, the statutory agent is not going to be, the Corporations Commission wouldn't be able to help with that. So, for example, were the board to take this to a complaint notice of hearing, the complaint notice of hearing could technically be served upon the Corporation Commission, as well as attempting service upon the statutory agent, as well as potentially moving to a publication. Additionally, if the board were to pursue injunctive remedy, the corporation would be able to be served at the Corporations Commission if you're unable through other means.
Thank you. It just seems like that there's, looking through everything here, the way that they're providing business to folks in Arizona just seems like there's something that may not be quite right here, and then not responding and everything just worries me about folks out there in Arizona that may be using this company that might not be providing the type of service that it's not regulated by, or it's not under our, they should be under our jurisdiction based on the information provided.
Again, the statutory agent wouldn't typically
but I was just trying to, they should at least accept the mail. That was my main point. It's like you could never even, that's, I think, the primary purpose is to at least accept mail on behalf of a company if we can't even they never signed a sheet of paper with, I'm assuming, certified mail. And we got it.
Yes, sir. The reasoning behind trying to reach out to the statutory agent and any other parties associated with that company, I was trying to get verification that Mr. Scott was acting on behalf of the firm, and I just was never able to get that secondary verification from anyone. As far as advertising to the public, I wasn't able to find any online advertisements that the public would find. I found a couple of third-party sites that mentioned this firm, but as far as advertisement, the only concrete thing we had was the repeated emails that were sent to us, although I believe it's probably reasonable to assume that those are going out to others as well.
Okay, so it's just really those emails that you mentioned inside of the documents. Just emails. Okay. All right. I got nothing else.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question here. For Jason Scott's case here, when was the last time you actually spoke with him?
It was... let me refer my report. I can get you an actual date.
I'm just wondering if it's too premature to even come out with this, because it's kind of like he hasn't even communicating at the end here.
It seems like he's hidden himself pretty well. It might be difficult to chase down.
If I may add, so the original email came to our complaints email, so I received that email. Dan was trying to contact him. I also asked for a phone number. It was the same phone number, same email. He tried attempting setting up a meeting, and he would just hang up. So.
And that was done on February 23rd. He answered, recognized his voice and accent from a previous call. And I mentioned to him that I was calling in response to the email that was sent to my supervisor, and at that point he hung up. I tried calling back, went straight to voicemail, left a voicemail, never got that back. On March 1st, we tried a second time to reach out to him. At that point, the phone line itself was apparently deactivated. Tried again on March 11th, it was still deactivated. And on April 1st, we received the last email with pretty much the same information. And that was the last actual contact we had with Mr. Scott.
So as far as we know, he's not even still in. Are they in business still as a company? We didn't even know that.
As far as I know, they are still registered with the ACC. Beyond that, I have no idea.
Obviously, the website's not working. So.
I'd be ready for a motion if the chair is.
Unless anyone has any further comments, we'll accept a motion for a vote.
So, I guess I have a question on the procedure. Is this all certified letters? That's what you send out? Okay.
They've had their chance.
Okay.
If I may, I apologize. So the certified letter that was sent to the statutory agent, as far as I know, that one's never been delivered. The initial notice of investigation, since that wasn't responded to, I also sent that out, certified mail. I was able to verify that that was received and signed for, as well as the, I want to say the consent agreement as well. But
well, we haven't actually offered the consent agreement.
No, sir, the proposed consent agreement. Yes, the proposed consent agreement was sent out certified mail and was delivered and signed for.
Okay. And they've chosen not to appear here or speak on behalf of the case.
I've never received a response from them on what he wants to do with it or whether he wanted to attend this meeting or not.
All right, Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales, on item P24-026, make a motion to offer the proposed consent agreement that's included in the packet, and if not signed within 30 days, proceed to hearing.
So you're going to do that? The other case would be a separate motion.
Yeah, I'd want to do it separate, just to confirm
the things that we want. Absolutely. All right. Thank you, Mr. Sales. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second. This is Dana Klett. I second.
Thank you, Ms. Klett. Final discussion. All right. All those in favor in the room, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
All opposed? All right. Go ahead. Offer that consent agreement. Similar circumstances, obviously, under agenda item 8D4, which is Dan Bowman, also non-registrant. Any conversation, questions by the board on that one?
Chair, this is Jack Gilmore. Similar concern, very poor communication to staff, with many overtures to kind of justify what they did or didn't do. There were some other registrants involved, but still it's poor communication. So I don't know, there's a whole lot of pursuit here. They're a non-registered firm, correct?
Oh, that's correct.
So,
but they are putting themselves out to be offering architectural services, right. And that therefore becomes our jurisdiction.
So yeah, that was my only concern, is that I just think we need to give the attention to these companies that offer these kind of services. And $1,500 is concern for them, maybe, but I can easily see this thing going up.
Well, if they don't respond to our sign or consent agreement, then we'll go to here.
Yeah. Thank you. I've aired my concern. So, other than that, I'd like to adopt that recommendation and issue this letter of concern, or letter consent agreement. Sorry, for P24-036.
086.
You meant P23-086.
Oh.
I'm rubbing off on you. Sorry,
yeah. This is for case number P23-086. Sorry.
And if not signed?
If not signed in 30 days, we go to hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
This is Scott Sales. I'll second that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Any final discussion?
I have a question. This is Keith Smith, and I'm sorry I didn't bring it up before the vote, but since March 15th was the last time you were able to get a hold of him, is that right? He wanted additional time to review the consent agreement. Did he respond?
No, I have not heard back since last month's.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, Scott Sale, just similar to the last one, looking through the diligence and stuff, all the investigations and stuff, just going back and forth and being patient and really just keeping knocking on the door, trying to get some information for us to make an informed decision. Appreciate you and the rest of the investigative staff.
Well said, Mr. Sales. All right, all those in the room in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? That motion passes. All right, last item on our enforcement agenda. This is a very pleasant one of that, is the consideration for two wonderful professionals who wish to join our EAC membership ranks. One of those is Mr. Richard Frost, structural engineer, and Mr. Jonathan Nolan, registered land surveyor. Does anyone have any comments, concerns, or otherwise related to the consideration of this EAC membership for these two individuals?
Mr. Chairman, Scott Sales, both of them very well to join there. I really just have one question really for Richard Frost, just looking at the resume. He mentions NCES registration. I really just don't know what that is. It's neither of those. There is none. So I guess I'm more just concerned related to that, just on the resume for him, of what that is and what it's trying to portray. My concern on that.
Is that something that would inhibit you from wanting to accept Mr. Frost into a EAC membership?
No, it just maybe a potential follow-up, just to ask him what it is. I know it's, I don't think it's anything, but it just portrays something like I got something. I don't know of an NCS registration. He's talking about just typing stuff into the website, which should be that exciting.
Yep.
Anyway, that's all I got.
Any other comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion to include these two individuals in our EAC membership.
Chair, I'll make a motion that we accept for consideration for EAC membership Mr. Richard Cross as a structural and Mr. Jonathan Nolan as an RLS.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jack. All right, we have a second.
This is Dana Clyde, a second.
Thank you, Dana. Any final discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, our EAC has grown by two more members. I'd be curious what our total numbers are at this point as far as EAC membership. I know it's a pretty healthy number, but we couldn't do our jobs without these trusted individuals. So.
That's right, and there's always room for more.
I would be disappointed, Judith, if you didn't. So. All right, well, that concludes our enforcement matters. We move on to policy matters. So unless anyone has any objection, we'll just kind of run through this in order. So the first one is item 9A, which is our Mills case. Mr. Donald, I don't know if you have any update relative to that.
No, Mr. Chair, there is no update at present, but I certainly will provide one to the board as soon as we hear something from the court.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Donald. Next item is the United Kingdom Memorandum of Agreement, or MRA agreement, with NCPS. For Dana or Scott, any updates on that?
I'll just mention that I left it on there kind of as a placeholder. This is just it's such an exciting thing, and it's progressive in the sense that NCWS is trying to continue to work with jurisdictions that are interested in adopting this. I think Arizona is very interested. I have spoken to a few members of our legislature about possibly working on legislation for not only the engineers that are getting ready to formally enter into this agreement with the United Kingdom, but also with the architects too, since they've already done that. So I kind of just put it here as a placeholder that they know Arizona is on the intent list of wanting to look at that. And the formal signing with NCWS will be in August at their annual meeting. So we might just leave it there and glaze over the next couple months till we have more information.
Sounds great. It's very exciting to see that come to fruition. Okay, speaking of interesting things, Kurt, I'm not sure if this is in your wheelhouse, but let's kind of run through some of our lovely House and Senate bills that are headed before the legislature. And by the way, I just want to again thank you and the team for putting together this very nice matrix that is so easy to follow all of these various House and Senate bills. So thank you again for doing that.
Yeah, compliment Hayden. He's the one who puts it together and keeps it updated for us.
Thank you, Hayden.
Do you have any questions before we start? Okay, just a quick rundown. So HB 2100 was vetoed by the governor. HB 2243 is technically still alive. It just needs to go before the Senate COW.
COW. Maybe on the whole.
2253 was never heard in committee, so it's basically dead. HB 2308 was signed into law on 4-8-2024. That regards the offenses must be substantially related to the profession if denying a license for those kind of purposes. This board is always going to follow that anyway, so there's not going to be a dramatic change for us, but now it's kind of more, it's in codified. HB 2593 is pretty much dead because it was held in committee. HB 2632 needs to go to the Senate COW, so it's still alive. HB 2812 is basically dead because it was not heard in committee. HB 2855 was not heard in committee, is pretty much dead. SB 1112, it was never transmitted to the House, so it's dead. SB 1343 was vetoed by the governor on April 2nd. SB 1365, it was not heard in committee, so it's dead. SB 1634, requires a third read in the House, and HCR, is that listed on our new, yes, HCR 2052 was not heard in committee and is effectively dead. I would like to ask the board, would you like us to keep the listed items that are technically not going anywhere on this list for future board meetings?
Yes, No, I'm going to already answer that for you. No, and I apologize that we didn't just take more off already that aren't. I mean, we try to just make you aware of the things that are obviously directly related to the board that could impact the agency, board, our process, whatever. And, so the list is getting much, much shorter.
Based on what Kurt just went through, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 are dead. So, yeah, your list will be a lot shorter for the next meeting.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Sales on HB2632 on there. I guess, is there potential next steps, or what would one anticipate the next steps could possibly be?
I mean, it needs to be heard on the Senate floor. That's where we're at right now. I will say, pertaining to that continuation striker bill, I still am receiving so many letters of support that are going to the governor, to the Senate leaders, and we're trying to, any of them that I'm made aware of, I compile into one whole, well, Kurt compiles, because I send them to Kurt. If he doesn't have them already, he puts them in one big PDF so that we can share that with the governor's office to show the tremendous amount of support from every profession and individuals and private businesses, associations. It's been wonderful.
Okay, so then it just needs to be agendized for the Senate floor to be able to move forward.
Yeah, that's understanding. That would be the next step. It has to be heard on the floor for it to proceed. I'm looking at the Senate calendar right now, and they've been meeting once a week on Wednesdays. Currently, there are no agendas for tomorrow.
Okay, so those for those of us on the board and anybody following along at home, their bingo card, they could go on and check the agendas for potentially Wednesdays, or, I mean, just keep checking the website, see what's going on, be informed.
Yeah, correct. So you can also look up the bill itself in the online registry of bills, and if there's a change, you can find it there as well when it's newly agendized for a new new floor or a new committee.
If you just put the bill number in and look at that overview, but we'll always have that as well. And even though the Senate is saying we're currently meeting one day a week right now, that can change. Anything can change. So even if I told you this is what it is, that could change as soon as we're done here. So it's just to be continued. Keep you updated. And if anything significant happened, we would send out an email.
Well, we still have a little over 2 months to go. A lot can happen in that time. Great. Thank you, Kurt. Judith, moving on to the director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You might notice it's exceptionally longer this month. If you had so much time on your hands that you wanted to peruse extra reports, so I believe it was Mr. Sales at a previous board meeting had asked for a little bit of expanded information with the licensing, similar to what we had done with the investigations reports. So. Again, thank you to Hayden for expanding those reports for us and providing that information. I think it may be overkill for a monthly report. I'm certainly happy to do that, anything that the board members want, but I would think maybe annually or twice a year, maybe for the extensive licensing report that you're seeing there today, and then go back to the kind of one-page overview of licensing. Anyway, you can think about it. If you think, yeah, I'd like that, but one other thing monthly or something, just let us know and we can make that happen. We're doing fine with our budget. Scott stepped out. Somebody's saying, the state's not doing fine with their budget. They're struggling, and that's causing us to struggle. We're being asked to... And on very short notice, provide a lot of reports, and not just our agency, but every agency in the state, all about budgeting and headcount and everything under the sun, which is always a struggle because this always pertains to the general fund. And as you know, we do not get our funding from the general fund. We are self-funded from the registrar fees. So I always like to remind everybody of that. But anyway, as far as our agency funds, we are fiscally sound. We are on target. Again, the report that I look at least weekly and monthly with Central Services Bureau is the report with projections, which looks very different from this report without projections. Suffice it to say, we will end the year in the black, which is always the most important thing to know. Online transition, heavy sigh from all staff and everybody under the sun. Okay, so we're still working on it. That is the short sum up answer. It has been a painful process. We've changed project managers multiple times. Julie and Orlene and Jamie and Kurt. And actually, all of the staff has started online training to try to learn the process. But there's, I don't know, Kurt, is there anything that you want to add to that? It's just, we cannot wait. We're so excited, but it's still in motion.
Yeah, this last month we haven't actually met. They too wanted us to do the training before we would meet up again. However, that's slowed down the project, obviously. And hopefully we're going to be starting that up again next week, or this week. Meeting with Ventia again and trying to get this moved along.
I mean, all of this ties into our budget as well, and we've been, so I think this is all appropriate to say that we've been asked to cut our operating costs. Again, money don't come from the general fund, so it's a struggle for me when they say cut your operating costs. I'm like, well, why? but for reasons unknown to me, before I was at this agency, when the simple payment portal was set up to allow individuals to pay their renewal fee online, it was set up where the agency would absorb the bank fee that's charged when you use your credit card. So we're evaluating those fees right now. It's fairly significant. And I said, when we go completely to an online system and all people are no longer receiving the inordinate amount of checks and cash in the mail, I know, I hope you all cringed when I said that out loud, but people send cash in the mail, believe it or not. And I can't even imagine the amount of, you know, that will change the credit card fees. There's no way the agency could absorb those fees. And I would have never set that up in the first place. So that Band-Aid's going to get ripped off. And I'm looking at that to show the operating costs cut, in essence, will be that we will no longer be absorbing any bank fees or credit card payments. So, and we're working with Treasury and CSB, who's the other entity we're working with on that? Anyway, so that's in process, and actually that change of not absorbing the bank fees will occur, the new fiscal year. So, June 1st, 1 month before the end of the fiscal year. Electronic checks will be an option. Yeah, too. So, okay, let's see. Any questions on the online thing? I'm probably bored you to death on that. All right, so board staff, that's always exciting. We have, and I asked him to stay in here, and he stayed much longer than he needed to, so huge thanks. This is Benito Avila? Avila. Which way am I saying it? So he is our new licensing specialist, and they're very excited to have Julie's whole team is very excited to have Benito here. And while we're on board staff, I just have to say, because last Friday we had a little nacho get together so we could get to know our two new staff members, Benito and Dale. And as we were talking and asking them questions, it came to light that I'm so proud to say this, our agency has representation of veterans from all four branches of the military. So Benito is Air Force, Eric, our investigator, is Army, Dale is Marine, and Brandon is Navy. And I had thought that was just exceptionally really cool. Right? I know. I'm like, I want to make a poster or something. I told him.
Judith, you need Space Force and Coast Guard now. It'll have all six.
Well, Caitlin, and she doesn't know. We've signed her up for Space Force. So anyway, that was really neat. And I told him, I actually told Brandon, I said, we need to exploit this. This is so cool. All four branches of the military. So. Okay. Board composition, no changes in that. And I'm just going to leave it to you for the licensing reports and the enforcement reports. If you have any questions or you want to discuss anything at all.
Scott Sales, thank you for all the detailed information in there for sure. And I concur, maybe once a year, maybe twice, but once. There was a lot of stuff that was included in there, so it was nice and thorough and just provides. I'm still looking through a lot of the information. It's a lot to tackle. So
I just like all the pretty colors. You know, as an architect, we like that. So Scott likes the numbers. I like the colors. So, Mr. Donald, I don't believe that you have an Assistant Attorney General's report this month. Is that right?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
So we'll go on to the standing committee reports. Kurt, I don't believe there's much to report on that either.
No, there's not. No new meeting for LNR. June 4th will be the next HISC meeting.
Excellent. All right. Now moving on to our board member reports and National Council activities. So, Bill, why don't you start us off with
the
National
Council? Trouble from the job, just as usual.
You're stoic and silent, just like your rocks. Yeah.
I have been pestering Phil because ASBOG is looking for some more board members to serve on. And so Pastor Bill frequently for various things, but to see if he has any exceptional geologist friends that might be interested in serving on the ASBOG board.
I got you three EAC geologists. So kind of like you can.
Which affects this board far more than the national board. So
and I did meet with the director of the ASBOG Association twice since last month, which is kind of unusual, but they're very interested in knowing about the health of the board and what's going on. So that's been a pleasure to do that. And they've also been sending letters and facilitating that, and also from AIPG, some other national associations.
Great. Jack, how are things over in Clark?
Well, the only exciting thing happening in Clark was the annual gala, the award ceremony that Judith and I attended.
That was ASLA. That's
that
on our list
Clark,
too, though.
It was ASLA, but there's some Clark overlap stuff. But we did receive that certificate.
Yes, it was very exciting.
I don't see it up in a wall. Truth.
Right, you know why I'm waiting on the Lancer Bears. So when we went to the ASLA Awards Gala, it was phenomenal because we were able to speak to a lot of younger Lancer Bears, be a presence, be a face, introduce ourselves. And they were thrilled to have signed by the governor a framed copy of the proclamation. Is it Lancer Bear month or was it week? Do you remember? Week? Well, anyway, they were so kind. Well, actually, should I say I prompted them? Makes it sound less magnanimous. I said, hey, where are you going to hang that thing? And they said, we don't know. And I said, I have an idea. So they let me take it home so that I could bring it in and hang it in the board office. And I let them know that the Lancer Bears had also had a signed copy, framed copy, that they were wanting us to hang in the board office too. So it's kind of exciting. But Clarb is, Julie and I sat in on a Clarb conference, so Julie probably has some comments. It was a mid-year update. They, they're doing a lot of things. I think one of the things that's interesting is they're really trying to do a deep exploration on the evaluation of experience requirements. So how, you know, to create better consistency of evaluating experience throughout all of the jurisdictions. For me, that was a big takeaway and something that I thought was important. In addition to, I mean, all of the wonderful programs that they do, but I do think that's important. Julie, did you have thoughts on that in the year?
Yeah, I mean, not only the experience that they're looking over, but also continuing education. They want that to be kind of a uniform standard throughout all the jurisdictions, and always talking about the uniform standard implementation in which jurisdictions have begun to adopt that.
So. All right. So that addresses both CARB and ASLA. Okay. All right, on to NCARB. Nothing too terribly exciting to report there. We do have our annual business meeting coming up in June. There's a variety of resolutions that will be before the membership to make them interested in. At this point, nothing too terribly exciting. Scott and Dana, anything from NCBS?
Okay. NCS, I was just going to say, there's a they have the Western Zone meeting that's going to be the afternoon of the 16th of May and then move through Saturday. And that's coming up. And just also, you know, members of the board, if you're receiving emails and such for, like, it's bi-monthly or quarterly, just Western Zone NCS meetings or learning sessions. They're doing these, it seems like, more regularly now, which is nice, just to help inform all the members in the Western Zone, the 15 states inside the Western Zone, of what's kind of what's going on and processes, and just trying to keep people, I think, more up to date in between the other meetings. So that is kind of nice. So if you see those in there, you can click the buttons and get registered, and then you'll get sent a link and listen in on what's going on there. So I don't really have anything else to mention on that. I know there'll be more after the, I guess, at the next meeting, because it'll be after the next zone meeting. So there should be some interesting updates related to the education committee and some of the other committees on potential new things that they'd like to, again, kind of smooth out nationally. So I don't know, Dan, if you have anything else to add.
No, there will be more information on our next meeting.
Anything from the Arizona Professional Land Surveyors Association?
So just an update. I know that they're trying to make the central zone meetings a little more accessible to people in the East Valley. So they are mixing it up a little bit with quarterly, and I could be corrected on this. Monthly or quarterly, they are switching between West Valley and East Valley. So this last month they had kind of like a happy hour central zone meeting in Gilbert. So in a few months, it'll be back in the East Valley. So they're just trying to make people a little more accessible to people in the East Valley and make it easier to get to the meetings.
So I actually asked for this to be agendized because Dan, you better come up here because I'm going to put Dan on the spot. Dan is our investigator that has kind of taken on land surveying as a special project. At my request, and I appreciate his efforts to do that, to sit in on all the extra webinars and just try to become a little extra informed. So Dan and I were able to attend the Western Region Land Surveyor Conference last month. Was that last month? Yeah, last month. And it was huge. The attendance was well over 1,000 land surveyors that were there. Multiple classes running simultaneously, so Dan and I attended different tracks, and in fact, so, and I presented on one of the days with all of my counterparts in the Western Region states, and Dan was very kind to come in on that, and I shooed him out because there was another class going on at the same time that I really wanted to sit in on, but I thought you should hear just a couple of words from Dan. And I'm going to tell you, he wrote up a 2-3 page synopsis of every class that he attended with a beautiful paragraph at the beginning and a synopsis or a caveat saying this, all of this was intended for professional land surveyors, which I am not, and I wasn't either. So we just jump in and learn what we can about everything, and it is such an eye-opener and a really good opportunity to understand the profession better. So go ahead, Dan.
Thank you. First of all, I just wanted to thank the board and management for being willing to send us to stuff like that. It's pretty exceptional for an agency to be willing to put investigators through training that aren't strictly investigations. I did attend several of those classes. Much of it was way over my head, but what I did grasp did help to understand what we're looking at. Although we're, you know, reliant on EAC members to provide technical assistance, it does help us to have as much of a cursory understanding as possible when we're looking at this stuff, so it's not just a bunch of maps and numbers that we know nothing about. So I just wanted to extend appreciation that you guys are willing to send us to trainings like that.
Anything that makes makes your job easier and better is to the benefit of everybody, especially the health, safety, and welfare of the public. So.
Next year, I think that conference will be in Tucson. So I already told Arlene, I said, I think we should just rent a van and load up the whole investigations team and go on a field trip down there.
Yeah. Road trip. All right. Well, that's great. I-Corps, anything on that, Judith, you want to report out?
So I-Corps is meeting every other week to try to really burn the midnight oil and finish this project so that it can be presented at all of the annual meetings. They've just done a phenomenal job on this spreadsheet that would blow your mind and narrowing it down between areas that actually don't need any review or what should be collaborated between professionals and overlapping practice and things that need a real deep dive in some committees. And I kind of thought I should probably put I-Corps down there as a placeholder, but really they're really looking at finalizing a document to present at all to the architects, engineers, and surveyors, landscape architects. And then the last conference of the year is the interior designers, which Arizona doesn't have, but a lot of the other jurisdictions do. And then they'll pull us all together in person again. But up until that point, it's going to be every other week trying to finish it.
Thank you. All right, so our next board meeting is May 21st, so like Scott mentioned, we'll have some updates from NCPS's Western Zone. And then our last item here is any suggested topics for future meetings? Anything that anybody here would like to add?
I figure this might be the spot to do it, so I don't get my hand slapped for being out of order on something else. But so just related to the item 13 with the board member reports and the other one, the National Council activities, just curious if those are, or maybe some outreach between then and now about, I don't know if there are or aren't, but are there any other, you know, groups that maybe we should be getting feedback from on a monthly basis as it impacts the board? So
I would think the AIA would be one group
one
architects.
Well,
can I just talk to I mean,
this is technically still...
Is it still under 13? If it's under 13,
yeah.
Then I'm... Okay. All right. This is just kind of the idea of is there more items, or we can agendize it for a future discussion topic of which ones should be added.
Any time there's information to share about any state or local association, I try to list it under that. But we can always, if there's something that needs to be reported on, we can always put it on that, you know, portion of the agenda. I don't know that the AIA always has something...
Any other topics? All right, well, then I believe that concludes our meeting today, so I'll adjourn the board at what time have we got?
11:11.
Yeah, 12:11, that's long.